Scattered showers moved across areas of Minnesota, Iowa, and Missouri this morning, but the best rains might be falling in Arkansas. Unfortunately, this morning looks to be the best opportunity for rains in some of the driest areas of the belt. We'll find out from Michael in just a bit. We will talk the presidential race with Jim, and we're going to also talk late season crop stress.
Live from a puddle-laden central Iowa via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer. Then it's Dr. Michael Cordonier from Soybean and Corn Advisor. And right after the news, Michael Clark from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Puddle-laden, huh? You must have gotten more over your way than we did here. I think I kind of shot the gap in northeast Iowa.
It's possible, you know, and for fans of Skid Row, I'm going to throw out a Skid Row reference. This morning, it was a wonderful thing because I woke up to the sound of pouring rain. It was wonderful. The bedroom is on the top floor of the house.
Yeah.
And I thought, what is going on up there? What is that? What is that pitter-patter sound?
The shower's on. Those doggone dogs.
Well, they do like an early morning shower. That's, you know, how they start their day, and it's probably good.
Yeah.
But no, we got some rain, and there are puddles. It's cleared up now. This was hours ago. But it's
And we continue to see a chance for some showers to move through here in northeast Iowa, but I wouldn't even I wouldn't classify what we got here a rain. It barely rained.
And here it
call it that.
It came down pretty solid when I woke up, and I don't know how long it had been going on. It might have just started, because as quickly as it arrived, it was gone, and then it started again, and then it stopped. It was sort of a stop and go type of a thing. So, you know, not what you would call a soaker. But
we'll see if Dr. Michael Cordonier thinks that will make any difference for the corn crop. I kind of doubt if it will, but it could still help out this bean crop.
Okay, I would tend to agree.
So I'm looking forward to the conversation with Michael. I haven't talked to him for a while, so it should be good. We'll talk about the late season stress. We got Wiesmeyer coming up, and, of course, Michael Clark here in just a few minutes. Let's get to the news. What do you got?
Yeah, when you've got Cordonier on, make sure and make him say the names of some of those towns in South America. I love to hear him pronounce those, and it helps me too. Can you do that?
Okay. I don't know how much South America we're going to talk. We might get to some of it.
Okay. That would be great. Farm country temperatures eased over the weekend, offering welcome relief to areas hit with blistering heat last week. That will ease some of the stress from last week's hot weather, but only scattered rains are expected over the region. Corn and soybean crops will continue toward maturity on a rapid pace without significant rainfall in many areas. Meanwhile, frequent rains are expected across the Delta and Southeast this week. And we'll talk to Michael Clark, but you mentioned some pretty decent rains down south right now, Chip.
Yeah, exactly. And they've been getting the rains. It's one of the reasons that we continue to anticipate a really good national average corn yield. The yields down south are kind of lifting things from the bottom.
China announced that manufacturing activity expanded in the month of August as the country continued to recover from the coronavirus. The official manufacturing purchasing managers index for the month of August came in at 51.0. That's up 0.1 of a point from July, but missed analyst expectations of a 0.2 rise. That's according to the National Bureau of Statistics. China's non-manufacturing PMI, which includes service and construction activity, rose to 55.2 in August from 54.2 in July, so up a full point on the non-manufacturing PMI. That's seen as a sign that Beijing's efforts to stimulate consumption at home are having an impact, Chip.
Yeah, and it's almost like it's going to be here. I mean, any step forward is a positive sign. We're going to be looking for some of those positive signs come Friday when we get the jobs data.
Well, approximately 70% of crude oil production and half of the natural gas production in the Gulf of Mexico area remained shut in as of midday yesterday. That's according to the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. At its peak, more than 80% of crude oil and more than 60% of natural gas production was shut in anticipation of Hurricane Laura. Personnel are still evacuated from 137 production platforms. That's about 21% of the manned platforms in the Gulf of Mexico. Not sure how long we'll get back on track. Later last week, they were saying that the refiners onshore really weren't damaged all that much, and so they at least anticipate refining activity to pick up.
Okay, good. That's good to hear that we'll get the refining activity back, but it will also, I mean, we got to get these platforms back in production as quickly as we can.
Well, White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows said Friday that President Trump would sign a coronavirus relief package totaling $1.3 trillion. That's an increase over the $1.1 trillion proposed by Senate Republicans. Meadows told reporters, quote, the president right now is willing to sign something at $1.3 trillion, saying that figure had been offered privately to Democrats. He did mention that Speaker Nancy Pelosi has stood firm in her demand for a $2.2 trillion relief package. Meadows and Pelosi spoke Thursday afternoon, resuming negotiations on the next coronavirus package that has been stalled for weeks. We've been talking about this. I don't know. I mean, the last thing I heard from this is that relations had turned fairly sour.
Oh, sure.
But Friday, maybe things sweetened up just a bit.
Well, we'll find out from Wiesmeyer here in just a little bit.
Good. And finally, speaking of U.S. oil exports to China are set to reach a record in September with 19 tankers signing provisional bookings to load American crude for China, according to Bloomberg. But those bookings are subject to change, Chip. But if all of them set sail, buddy, exports would be a total of 37 million barrels. That's the highest on record for a single month.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. How are you, Michael? It's good to talk with you again.
Good, Chip. Good. How are you doing?
Doing okay. We've got a chance for some showers here in northeast Iowa, and that we've seen some rain in Iowa this morning. But, boy, that looks like about it for the week as far as rainfall chances, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately. You've got some stuff going through right now, a little bit through Des Moines and central Missouri. A nice rain in southern Wisconsin as well. But after that, a cold front works in, and it gets really cool. But in terms of rainfall, that's really about it for the next 7 days.
Well, the cool temperatures, that's a nice bit of relief from what we had last week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some places in the 5 to 10 day chip are going to be running as much as 10 degrees below average. So
wow,
it's going to feel it'll feel downright like really like probably mid-October
Of fall.
It'll feel good at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. So, hey, how much good did Hurricane Laura do for the Eastern Belt?
Well, you know, in the far southern and eastern portions of the Ohio Valley, Kentucky, far eastern Ohio got some rain from it. But really, when you look at the 7 day rain numbers, it really didn't do a whole lot for many people in terms of the Corn Belt. So a lot of it was south and east. And at the same time, it took moisture from us, you know, it kind of robs that energy source. So not much in the way of from that.
Okay. So these cooler temperatures, how long do they stick around, do you think, Michael?
I think there's a risk that the majority of September, especially in the Corn Belt and the grain areas, are going to be cooler than average. If there's a risk for any warmer temperatures, it's probably post September 20th, but there could be another bigger cold front mid-September to cool it off yet again. So it's like a cooler month.
All right. Hey, I'll take it. I like the cool temperatures. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Michael. That is Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. He talks with us.
Sounds like
Monday
sweater
morning.
Weather ahead.
It almost does. Have you
got it
ready to go there, buddy?
Oh, I do.
I know you do. I know you can't wait.
Always.
I can't wait for Jim Wiesmeyer. He's coming up next. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us on this Monday morning, the last day of August 2020. Hard to believe September is here tomorrow. I had an opportunity to listen to the free-for-all on Friday, and there was just more to the conversation, I think, that needs to be had with Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. He joins us right now. How you doing, Jim?
Pretty good, Jeff.
Good, good, good. Okay. Since the Democrat Party have held its national convention, the Republican Party held its national convention, when you look at the polls now, did Biden or Trump get the biggest boost out of the convention?
You can always cite different polls, Chip, but I think the ones that I monitor, and it's more than one, does signal that Trump gained some ground on Biden following the conventions.
Okay. Why do you think it is? Is it because President Trump is out and about and Vice President Biden is still – now, I understand that he's going to Pennsylvania today or –
He'll be in
later?
Pittsburgh today. Yes.
Okay.
The key reason, Chip, I think, is Trump and his allies made urban violence a key theme during their convention. And you had Kellyanne Conway said in a controversial interview last Thursday that the more chaos and anarchy and vandalism and violence reigns, the better it is for the, you know, choice on who's best for public safety, law and order. But there are other avenues. Now, both candidates are seeking to address worsening incidents of violence. And this got Biden out of his bunker at home in Delaware. I mean, he'll be in Pittsburgh today. So that clearly was a signal that the Democrats were, you know, getting nervous. Biden is still ahead in the Real Clear Politics poll of around 7 percentage points, but recall it wasn't that long ago Biden led Trump by double digits.
Right. Is there going to be a debate, Jim?
There will be a debate. If not, then I think Trump will go ahead in the polls. I know House Speaker Nancy Pelosi gave Biden a way out, but boy, I think that their internal polling would show that that would be a strategic error, Jeff. And also, the recent polls that I read over the weekend, Trump's approval among blacks rose 9 points during the Republican convention, and that definitely generated concern among Democrats. You know, Trump in 2016 got 8% of the black vote. His campaign people tell me he's aiming for double digits this year, and if he succeeds, that could be enough to win some key, very close states.
Yeah. Well, he had some awfully powerful speakers talking about what President Trump has done for the black community.
Some of the best speeches were them. Yes.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Senator Scott was really good with it, and there were others as well. I've mentioned a couple of times, Jim, that I wonder if this, the current situation that we're in, is where the Democrat Party wanted to end up with. What, 64 days to go to the election? Do you think this is what they wanted?
Well, what they had to do, Chip, relative to the candidate that they have, Joe Biden, even though he had a very good acceptance speech that was off a teleprompter, and he'll still be under the focus, microscope, if you will, during a hoped-for first debate on September the 29th in Cleveland, Ohio. But another reason why I think the Democrats were breathing easier with Biden is that he, more than any other candidate in that list, is able to generate some potential votes out of the 13, only around 13% of truly independent voters. So I think they got the candidate they wanted rather than the far left candidates of Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, who really Trump wanted one of those three because it would have been easier for him to show the demarcation, you know, between the parties.
Sure. And because Biden, I guess, is more moderate, do you think that there's the potential that some Republicans, because we're seeing some past Republican administration cabinet members supporting Biden, coming out and supporting Biden over Trump. Do you think that there is the potential that we will see some Republicans in this current environment vote for Joe Biden?
Yes, I do. And it's the never Trumpers, but also this potential number of people that you mentioned, more than a few former, you know, Bush, both Bush, you know, presidential, you know, people, including former USDA Secretary Ann Veneman, that really surprised me because she owes a lot of her career. I'm not saying you have to be married to a party, but her entire career was fostered by the Republican Party. What I think gets those Republicans turned Biden people probably nervous if they're asked whether or not then that they support the Democratic platform. That's where they're going to have a harder time answering.
Yeah. You know, and then you've got some commentators that are liberal by their own definition. I'm thinking of Bill Maher in particular, who over the weekend came out and said, you know what? I'm starting to get the same feeling that I had 4 years ago, that this is going to go Trump's way.
Well, and then you had the most liberal of the commentators, he's not a news person, Don Lemon on CNN, who openly worried on air that their focus group interviews were showing that this violence in Portland and elsewhere was starting to hurt Biden, and that's when he said something had to be done about it. And this was on air. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Jim, President Trump is going to have to end the uncertainty over the gap year waivers if he hopes to get support. Because when you look at the record of the Obama-Biden administration when it comes to issuing these waivers compared to the Trump administration, if the RFS is your deciding factor, the way things stand right now, people are going to vote for Biden.
Yes, and you had another Des Moines Register story, Chip, over the weekend that said Trump could lose Iowa, and it basically got into the waiver issue.
Yeah.
You know, the White House clearly saw that story. Pro Farmer was told last week to pay close attention on the dates that Trump will visit to Iowa. Now, they made a big point of telling me that. I can only presume that the logic would tend to dictate that should be good news for the corn-based ethanol sector. But logic and you know, government announcements sometimes, you know, part the ways.
Yeah, no doubt about that. No doubt. Okay. House Speaker Pelosi and the Republicans are still about $1 trillion apart in the coronavirus, next round of coronavirus aid, right?
Yes, they seem to get further apart. But and this is why Secretary Perdue came out last week and said he can tap the CCC for a portion of CFAP too, but that doesn't get him anywhere relative to the indemnity payments for livestock producers nor the ethanol aid program, because he says that they need congressional authority for that. But I still think between now and the end of September, we'll have a package out of Congress.
Okay. All right. So in the look ahead for the week here, Jim, campaign is going to dominate, but we've also got the jobs report on Friday, right?
Jobs report is key. And also you have a number of, you have Canada's, you know, Stats Canada today. Yep. And you have, the presidential candidates. Now they're taking the gloves off. And that always happens after the conventions. Now we're going to see the full debate.
Yeah. What is the schedule on the debate? I kind of half joked around that I was going to be watching it for entertainment value only, but obviously it's taking on greater importance now.
Yes. September 29th, I think it'll be the first one where most people will watch. And then they typically, if it's history, they go down from there, Chip.
Yeah.
But you've got September 29th, Cleveland, October 5th, Miami, October 22nd in Nashville. And also, who's going to moderate those? What types of questions are they going to ask? You know, those are all very important things. And China will be one of the key debates. But we got another good news with the, China today for the U.S. corn sector, because they made another big daily announcement of U.S. corn sales to China.
Yep. Yep. All right. Is there going to be any VP debates?
Yes. Okay. There'll be one on, I'm going memory, yes, October 7th in Salt Lake City, Utah. Usually a vice presidential, you know, candidate can only hurt you. They can't help you. So if they spar and it's even, you know, it won't have much of any impact, Chip.
Gotcha, Jim. Thank you so much for getting our week started, buddy. Thank you.
Yep. Anytime.
All right. That is Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. We've got Dr. Michael Cordonnier up next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, I tell you what, it looked really good in the overnight session, went up through those July highs in the corn market, but backing off.
Yeah, backed off, Chip, here to a mostly weaker tone. I think that the corn market's kind of been lagging soybeans on the price advance here. And what we've seen is just the buyer interest has run out, and for the moment anyway. And that's despite another big daily corn sale this morning to China. So disappointing price action here mid-morning. We'll see how it closes out. But, I think when the bean market backed off its highs, corn lost its buyer interest, and here we sit with a lower tone.
Gotcha. Okay. What is going on in soybeans? A little bit of strength there right now.
Yeah, they gapped higher overnight and really sprinted. And I don't know whether we're just taking some profits out of the market or what. We've seen the funds pump some pretty hefty money into the long side of the market on this rally. And it's just been really strong. And I think probably just went a little bit too quick. And so we're backing off a little bit. But, you know, unlike corn, it is trading still to the upside. So that is a positive. Yeah. We'll see if we can hold on to these gains.
And wheat seems to be a willing mover to the upside.
Yeah, wheat, it took it a while to get going this morning or in the overnight session, but now it's actually the leader to the upside. So we'll see how it performs the rest of the day, if it can hold on to a leadership role into the close.
Right, real quick, not much going on in livestock.
No, pretty quiet morning. You know, started with a weaker tone. Have turned mostly firmer in live cattle futures. Feeders are still under pressure, and the mixed tone in the hogs so far this morning.
Gotcha. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Hey.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Trust in Food for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hello.
We haven't talked to Dr. Mike all season. This is the first time we've had him on during this growing season. It's Dr. Michael Cordonnier, soy and corn advisor and also Pro Farmer crop consultant. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing just fine, Chip. Good to talk Good. To you again.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you. It's been quite an eventful growing season here. I mean, it started off, I guess, okay. It was a little cool after we stuck a bunch of corn in the ground. But for the most part, we were pointing toward a big yield this year, weren't we?
Yes, and I think those record yields forecast in the August crop report were justified for the 1st of August. But it hasn't been very good since. And in fact, I was just checking some rainfall data, and a lot of the drier areas of the Corn Belt, like Nebraska, most of Iowa, northern half of Illinois, Indiana, western Ohio, they're running about 25% normal rainfall for the month of August. And, of course, we had very high temperatures last couple of weeks. So it has not been a good finishing weather for the crops.
Right. You know, the comment that we heard quite often on Crop Tour this year was that the Iowa crop has gone backwards since August 1, and it's still going backwards. And it feels like even with some of the relief that is some areas saw this morning with some rains and the cooler temperatures, it still feels like this Iowa crop is limping into the end of the season.
Oh, I would say for sure. And with that derecho storm, it's just like impossible to figure out the total losses from that sort of thing. So we won't know that until they finally get out there and harvest all that corn that's laying flat on the ground, which is good luck for that.
Right.
And, you know, the northern half of Illinois, I live in suburban Chicago, west suburban Chicago. We are really dry.
Yeah.
They don't grow much corn here, but I'm telling you, all the lawns are really crunchy.
Yeah. Well, there along the canal, the Hennepin Canal, that's where I noticed it last week, Michael, where it obvious, the crop stress is so obvious in through that area. And but I know that it's in other areas as well across northern Illinois, but good grief. If you've got Indiana going backwards, you've got Illinois, I'm going to argue, probably going backwards on its corn yield.
Yes.
What is going on down across the South? I mean, is it replacing the bushels that we're losing out of Iowa and Illinois, do you think?
Well, it's replacing some, of course. Tennessee, Kentucky, Missouri, they had a lot of rain from the hurricane. And also, it's very good in Minnesota and some areas up north, but it's not replacing your two biggest states.
Yeah.
You know, Iowa and Illinois combined have over 25% of all the corn. Then when you add Nebraska and Indiana, you're probably approaching 50%.
Yep.
So, no, I don't think it's replacing. Now, I currently got the corn at 178, and I'm leaning towards lowering that number. We'll see what the crop report says this afternoon. I think the conditions will go down 2 to 4 points. You know, we were surprised last week. It went down 5 points. So let's see what they say this afternoon. But it's certainly going to go down. You know, and I track the soil moisture on a weekly basis. And I'll bet you this afternoon we will be drier than the long-term average.
Yeah.
It really has dried out in August.
Yeah. Yeah. What percent of the crop, based on what on your soil moisture analysis, Michael, what percent of the crop needs rain?
Oh, I would say that's a good question. I would say it's got to be 50%.
Yeah.
I would say a good 50%.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not ideal going into the end of the season, no question about it. So what are we looking for in the field to indicate that the growing season, the end of the growing season, is taking a bite out of yield potential? I mean, I'm hearing some stuff that got to, say, 50% milk line and went black layer on the guys. That can't be good.
No, that can't be good. I hear the same thing. A lot of anecdotal reports of just quick dying of the corn. And it's going to be interesting to watch the percent dropping leaves for soybeans this afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, last week we were 4%. I'll bet you'd be over 10%. This afternoon. And soybeans, you know, when you give we had a lot of big bushy plants out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you give it a very dry month of August, the water demand is very high, and you see some quick wilting. And I'll bet you in these drier areas, a lot of the pods at the top of the plant are not going to fill out. And maybe the seeds for the rest of the plant are going to be smaller than normal. So for soybeans, you know, when you get this close to the end of the cycle, and you give really hot temperatures, dry conditions, the plant just decides to go ahead and shut down instead of trying to fill the last pods.
Right, right. What are you thinking for the national average bean yield right now, Michael?
Well, I'm at 52, and I'm definitely leaning towards lowering that.
Okay.
We'll see what the report says this afternoon. But, you know, I might take off 2 bushels off the corn and a bushel off the soybeans for starters, and then kind of play it week by week.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, you know, I was over in Ohio at the end of last week, drove back on Friday, and all across that I-80 corridor, and even in the bean fields, you could see the sand veins in the soil with that bean crop giving it up and giving up in a hurry.
Yes. A lot of reports of the beans, instead of turning bright yellow, they're sort of blotchy and sort of a dull green. And, of course, that indicates you've got moisture stress. And it's not good to finish off the crops under stress, that's for sure.
Right, right. No doubt, no doubt. Back to corn here for a second, because I when you were talking about your national average yield at 178, I meant to follow that up with that. Is that at USDA's harvested acreage number, or have you taken something off?
I've taken off 500,000 acres.
Okay.
Due to the storm in Iowa, and then just generally other things. So, and that's just a guess as well. I'd be very interested to see how much of that corn in Iowa is going to be claimed for insurance and not harvested. And when they do harvest, there's got to be just tremendous harvest loss from that corn laying on the ground. Now, this dry weather, in a weird way, is kind of good, I think, for that corn that's on the ground. You don't want, you know, wet and long-term conditions of cold, wet conditions with ears laying on the ground.
Right.
That results in a lot of molds and all kind of things. So maybe in a weird sort of way, dry weather for that storm-damaged corn is kind of a good thing.
Right, right. I hear you. And if that root is still you know, attached solidly, and you've got that dry dirt, it could hold on. And if you get into some wet soils during harvest and you start pulling roots instead of stripping ears, you know, that just, I mean, I don't even want to think about what the inside of the combine looks like when you start doing stuff like that in that down corn, Michael.
I don't think we've ever seen anything like this before. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this really flat corn ends up. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? A lot of those areas, it was some of the best corn in the state that blew down. I mean, there's no question about that. We were talking about corn that had easy 220 yield potential. There was some of that stuff that was probably pushing 250, 260 in a lot of cases. So we blew down the best crop that was in the state of Iowa. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
You know,
here's kind of, go ahead.
Also, you know, most of the corn blew down was in eastern Iowa. But what happened in western Iowa? You got extreme drought in western Iowa. In fact, last Thursday, Drought Monitor had Iowa 60% moderate drought, 29% severe drought, and 6% extreme drought.
Right.
So you got bad on both sides of Iowa.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, people are asking the question, and they're asking me all the time, what caused more damage, do you think, the windstorm or the drought? I don't care.
Right.
You know, it's both were not what we were looking for.
Well, if I had to choose a drought.
Yeah, I probably.
It goes more widespread, more uniformly problems. Some of the corn stood better than others, so I would say the drier weather is probably more important.
Right, right. Okay, 178 and 52. Sounds like a downside bias on both of those.
Correct.
What else are you watching for into the end of the season?
Well, I hate to say this, but the Brazilian farmers are just anxiously waiting to plant. Yeah. They got record high prices for corn, soybeans, rice, cattle, orange juice. You just name it, and it's just unbelievable good prices in Brazil. Now, the forecast for September for southern Brazil is drier than normal, and Argentina's already very dry. So this is La Nina. So we'll see if they have a dry start to the growing season. But they're looking, and they're forward contracting as much as they can. So they're really anxious getting out there in the field.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. They're they're looking at a kind of an ideal situation for them down there, no doubt. Michael, it was good to talk with you again. Thank you so much.
Always my pleasure.
You bet. That is Dr. Michael Cordonier. He is soy and corn advisor, pro farmer crop consultant right there. We'll be back. Davis and I'll wrap things up.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AGI, your on-farm partner. Visit aggrowth.com for more information.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Around these palms they must do some work.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Interesting conversation there with Dr. Michael Cordonier.
Always insightful. Yep.
Exactly. And talking about that bean crop, and there's a couple of other things that we didn't get to on it, talking about how this thing is finishing. He's at 52 with a downside bias on the national average yield because of the dry conditions. And I've said it a couple of times post crop tour that I've never seen a bean crop with more to lose. Okay. And it's because the pod counts were so fantastic out there and just so consistent. The number of pods in a 3x3 foot square started off in Ohio at 1155, 1156 in a 3x3 square. Indiana jumped up to 1,281. Illinois, just call it 1250. And when you look at those numbers, you got to be impressed because when you apply the average number of bushels produced per 1,000 pods counted, okay? Did you follow that?
Yep.
The average number of bushels produced per 1,000 pods counted. In Ohio, over the last 5 years, that number is right at 50 bushel, 49.96. And it's a big reason that the Ohio number is up at 50 bushels now is because last year was phenomenal. Last year was 64.1 bushels produced per 1,000 pods. It blows me away that it was that high. But our pod count out of Ohio last year was only 764, and Ohio had an average yield last year at 49 bushels per acre. 49 bushels per acre isn't all that spiffy, but the 64 bushels per 1,000 pods counted is a record for anything, any state, anytime, any year. Well, you know what? You wonder if 2012 didn't give us something that was at least close to that, because remember Hurricane Isaac came through in 2012 and kind of saved that bean crop in the Eastern Belt. Ohio was at 43.5 bushels per 1,000 pods in 2012. The winner chicken dinner in 2012. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In 2012 was South Dakota. 51.29 bushels per 1,000 pods counted, and the state only averaged 30 bushel. But it was still a big bean. It was still a big bean that we saw. But last year it was phenomenal in the Eastern Belt. Like I said, Ohio at 64, Indiana at 55, Illinois 54. Big, big numbers. Big numbers coming out of there. 2018 also had some big numbers, but not like what we saw a year ago in the Eastern Belt. So, like I said, on average over the last 5 years, bushels produced per 1,000 pods, right at 50 bushel for Ohio. Indiana, right at 48 bushel, 47.95 is the number. Illinois, 48.17. And then you get out to, let's cross the Mississippi, and Iowa at 48.78. Minnesota, 45.83, South Dakota, 47.47, and Nebraska comes in at 48.24. So when we take those averages and apply them to the pod counts that we pulled this year, okay, USDA on August 1 estimated the Ohio bean crop at 58 bushels per acre. The process that we use on tour, or I guess I shouldn't say on tour, it's a process that I developed and it's my yield model. It kicked out an Ohio bean yield of 57.7 bushels per acre, and USDA was at 58. Indiana kicked out a 60.8 bushel per acre. USDA on August 1 was 61. Other close misses. Let's go out to Nebraska, where USDA on August 1 was 62 bushels per acre, The yield model kicked out at 61.9. I'm going to go ahead and call Minnesota a close one. The yield model kicked out at 50.1. USDA on August 1 was 51. Okay. Now, there are some misses. Illinois, USDA had them on August 1 at 64 bushels per acre. My yield model only gave me a 59.6. The Iowa crop, USDA had at 58 bushels per acre. I could only get it to 56. Okay, so there are some misses in there. And then there's this one. South Dakota, USDA on August 1 had them at 50 bushels per acre, and the yield model kicked out at 58.9.
Oof.
I mean, if South Dakota comes in at 60 bushel, I'm going to be shocked, okay? I will be absolutely shocked. But that's the kind of potential that we were looking at. And when you look at the yield potential that we identified on day one of the tour out of Ohio and out of South Dakota, all of a sudden you realize, holy smokes. You know, it kind of set the stage and it set the tone for the tour for the whole week, the yield potential on the bean crop. So we've got those big numbers, but you go back just to 2015, okay? The five-year average, 5 years ago, the five-year average was 4 to 5 bushels under what we're looking at right now. So it's genetics, it's management, it's moisture availability that has been pushing that production up. And then throw on top of it the genetics that are adding more pods, and that's why we're seeing the potential for this bean crop to make leap forward in yield. Not just a step forward in yield, but a leap forward in yield. It's kind of interesting. If we could have just given it some moisture into the end of the season, it's hard telling what this thing could have done. Hey, come back this afternoon. We're going to talk more. We've got Jim Bauer from Bauer Trading up this afternoon on AgriTalk. And nothing that I don't know.